Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinth in the News. Today is the 17th day of the self-existing Owl Moon of Form, Gamma, Third Eye Chakra, Red Magnetic Moon Day. The affirmation is, I unify in order to purify. Attracting flow, I seal the process of universal water with a magnetic tone of purpose. I am guided by my own power doubled, the power of universal water. It's also Gregorian calendar, Wednesday, November 3rd, 2010. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Coove, that's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon. The schedule for my show is a little more fluid due to my other responsibilities and my guest schedules. So please check online on the Blog Talk Radio website and the Labyrinth Network Northwest website, as well as my website, TurningTideEnergetics.com. And you'll get the most up-to-date listings. I also wanted to make sure that you understand that, everybody out there, that today is the next to the last scheduled episode for this month, because we have the TLS gathering, which I am attending, the following week. And hopefully I'll get a whole bunch of new wonderful Labyrinth luminaries to be my guests during that week. So stay tuned. The 20th, when I come back on the 20th, please check the Blog Talk Radio website and my website and Labyrinth Network Northwest website for new listings and new episodes to be scheduled. So by then I should have some new people scheduled. Anyway, my lead-in music is the first cut, Icos, for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry, off of Susan Alexander's CD, Sequentia. If any of you would like to chat while we are on the air, please go to Christiana-Anea at blogtalkradio.com. My guest today is Dr. Lilian Lajley, astrologer, counselor, author of Labyrinths in Contemporary American Religion, Rituals That Engage a Sacred Cosmos, and one of the keynote speakers at this year's Labyrinth Society gathering next week in New Harmony, Indiana. Thank you, Dr. Lajley, for joining me today.
Welcome. I'm glad to be here, Christiana.
May I call you Lilian?
Yes, please do.
Okay, great. You're one of the founding members of the Labyrinth Society and a past director of research for them. When was the last time you gave a presentation at their gathering?
It's been several years since I've given a presentation, but I've been very involved in the gatherings. They're just an amazing opportunity to connect with other people who love labyrinths. And when I did it several years ago, it was on religious diversity and cosmology in the labyrinths. So I'm really looking forward to being there this time as well.
Well, it's a very interesting topic and a very interesting venue, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But first, I'd like to know a little bit about you for those people who are listening or who do tune in later on, who don't or aren't familiar with the Wisdom Circle and TLS. Do you currently have a clinical practice as well as being a university professor?
Yes, I do. I teach at the university here. I love to teach. I teach religious studies and philosophy. And then I also have a practice as an astrologer and a transformational coach. So I do both.
And what,
I have, Pardon?
What university do you teach at?
University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. I currently live in Chattanooga, Tennessee, so we're on opposite sides of the country.
And I thought you lived in West Virginia.
No, I'm originally from West Virginia, and that's my hometown. I'm lucky enough to have a hometown to go to every Christmas and holiday, but I live in Tennessee.
Okay. So do you use Labyrinth in your class curriculum or with your clients?
Yes, I have a portable Canvas Labyrinth, actually one that Lisa, who is the current president of the Labyrinth Society, created. And I do workshops with the Labyrinth, and I do different sort of events and rituals with the Labyrinth. And then with my clients, it's more with students, I guess, or in a workshop capacity. And then also in my class, you know, we always talk about the great Labyrinth building during the Middle Ages and the Gothic cathedrals and how that was a substitute pilgrimage for Jerusalem and the time of the Crusades. So, yes, I involve Labyrinth as much as I can, both as teaching and as practice.
So what are the titles of what classes do you teach at University of Tennessee? What are the names of the courses?
At the University of Tennessee, I teach a Western Humanities class, which is essentially what I call the great ideas of 2,000 years from the time of the Egyptians up into the Renaissance. I also teach, in the past I've taught classes on myth, symbol, and ritual, and classes on the varieties of early Christianity, different Gnostic beliefs and religions. And I've even taught religion in Star Trek. Teach a little bit of everything.
Oh, that must be a fun class.
It is a fun class. I love science fiction, and there's so much religion in science fiction, as you can see by the Avatar movie that just came out, or that it's wonderful to combine the two.
Yeah. Well, you say that your most important title is that of astrologer. I am, you know, a very, very limited understanding of astrology, only in relation to my own personal chart and my family's charts. But is it true that there are different kinds? And if so, what kind do you practice?
There's definitely different kinds of astrology. Astrology is a much bigger field than one would think. And the best way to sort of compare it is when you study religion, you know, there's going to be Buddhism and Hinduism and Christianity and Islam and indigenous religions. And you expect that in the field of religion. Astrology is very much like that. There's these different types of astrology. I mean, there's Hindu astrology, there's mythic astrology, there's what's called mundane astrology, where you try to figure out what's going on with the stock market. There's medical astrology. So there's very many different types of astrology that a person can become involved with. The kind of astrology I do is very much probably what you do with yourself and your family. I really look at the individual chart of a person and help them use that as a path of self-knowledge and personal growth. So I really see the astrological chart as being a tool for transformation and to help people live a life of balance. So I really do work with this chart in a very spiritual and psychological way with individual people.
And but isn't there, I once had my daughter's chart done, and he was an Egyptian astrologer, and degrees were different. He did mine too, and the degrees in the quote unquote normal chart that I already had done years before that, it actually was different somewhat because they somehow decide differently. It's a different measure or something. So I was actually in a different house sometimes with a different planet than I was from one to the other.
Yes. What you're talking about is the difference between sidereal or star measurements and tropical or the sun. And it's the difference between in Western astrology, which is, I'm a Western astrologer, it comes out of Western Europe, and we measure everything by the relationship of the sun, okay? And in India, in a type of astrology called Jyotish that Buddhists and Christians and Hindus and Muslims would use in that part of the world, they use sidereal astrology, or measure everything by the stars. And there's a pretty big difference. I'm a Pisces in the Western tradition and an Aquarian when I'm in India. So there is a difference. But it's, I don't see them as conflictual. It's confusing. But it's sort of like when I think of going to MapQuest and seeing how long it's going to take me to get to Vancouver, it could either give it to me in miles or it could give it to me in time, you know. And and both of those are accurate. And that's sort of like what it's like with these two different types of astrology. It's just two different forms of measurement, but they're both accurate.
Huh.
Any
that's
sense?
Very interesting. Yes, and I really didn't know, and it was very confusing to me. I said, I don't understand. How can I be one and then the other? And why hadn't, you know, and then I'm thinking, well, what is it, how does it call to me, or what do I feel that resonates more with me? And I guess it really depends on where I am in my life at the time.
Right. Yes, and the thing that I love about the astrological chart, especially when you get your own chart done based on your time, date, and place of birth, is that that's your chart for your entire life, and you can really use it, like I said, as a tool for self-knowledge, where you just keep unveiling yourself and finding more and more about yourself. So it takes a while to really connect to who, you know, to who we are. We're all on a path, which very much like the labyrinth, we're on a journey to find ourselves, and astrology is one tool. It's a map that can show you that direction, but it's something that you can use for your entire life. And it is a little bit too complicated for most people to understand it, so that's why they go to an astrologer. But you can learn an amazing amount about your chart, and I think it's a very beneficial process, which is why I teach astrology as well.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I had also my astrocartography done, and I born and raised, grew up, and spent most of my life on the East Coast. And my astrocartography chart said if there's a very difficult, plodding kind of existence, you will, and went into it, you know, and I won't go into it. But then they mentioned other places on the planet that were much more conducive to certain things flowering in my life. And in fact, I've come out here, and that has really been the case. And it's pretty amazing that it's very much it helps you to understand your relationship within your people that are attracted to you and you're attracted to, but also, you know, places that you're attracted to or you shouldn't be, or, you know, I was flabbergasted about that. That was years ago that I did that, and I still go back to that chart.
Yes, you're right. Astrocartography, which changes your chart and shows you where on the planet your better qualities will shine. And it's a wonderful process. I have a client who lived on the East Coast, was very successful, went to the West Coast, and just had a very difficult time, almost the exact opposite of you, and then moved back to the East Coast, and it just changes everything. And I think that's
interesting.
The sense of place and feeling that you're in place is very important with astrology, with religion, with the labyrinth. You know, we like to know that we're in the right place at the right time.
Right. Well, let's get back to this. The title of your dissertation, the title that I read earlier in introducing you, Labyrinth in Contemporary American Religion, Rituals that Engage a Sacred Cosmos. This links astrology to labyrinth. So can you talk a bit about this link and how this, what you see as the relationship between the two?
Yes, what I did is I did research for about 5 years on labyrinths and many different church labyrinths, labyrinths in the middle of fields, labyrinths at certain labyrinth society events. And I would interview people as they left and say, well, what did the labyrinth mean to you? What was your experience when you walked? And what I discovered is that people would describe the labyrinth according to their own belief system. So, for example, a Christian would say it was like walking to Jerusalem. Or a Native American said it's like stirring the medicine wheel. Or a Buddhist, it's like a walking meditation. And a woman who was involved in goddess worship said it was like walking down into the underworld with Persephone. So everybody described their experience on the labyrinth very differently. And I discovered about 17 different religious belief systems of people who used the labyrinth, and they described the labyrinth according to their own world belief. And I just found it fascinating in the way that the labyrinth can be used for religious diversity. It's really like a bridge. Okay, because I've taken it to religious diversity conferences, and you'll have a Muslim, a Jew, a Christian, a Hindu, all walking the labyrinth. There's no problem. They immediately can project their own cosmology. It's like a template or like a Rorschach test. You know, you show somebody a labyrinth, and what they see in it tells you about themselves. Well, astrology is one of those cosmological systems that are part of the labyrinth. And the labyrinth at Shark Cathedral, which is one of the favorite labyrinths in the world, I don't know if you've been there, but it's a beautiful 40-foot labyrinth in the old cathedral of Shark that was built around 1200. And it's the labyrinth that Lorne Artress used as her template for her labyrinth ministry. Well, that labyrinth, they believe, was associated with astrology and an astrological worldview, showing each ring was like one of the rings of the planets, and then another ring for the starry sky and for the elements and so on. So labyrinths are definitely connected with astrology. The seven circuit classical labyrinth, Sig Lundgren has written about how that's connected to the cycle of Mercury. And one of the reasons I got a seven-circuit labyrinth from Lisa is because I use it astrologically, with each of those circuits being one of the planets. So you can essentially walk and engage in your belief systems when you walk a labyrinth. And since astrology is one of my favorite belief systems, I really see myself sort of walking the heavens, you know, walking the cosmos when I'm engaged in the labyrinth. So
okay, yeah. Now this is really interesting. So now, and you please bear with me because I'm going to sidestep a little bit here, because of what you just said. So you have a seven circuit labyrinth. Is it the petite shard or is it a classical?
It's Lisa's own design, actually. It's called a peace labyrinth.
So it's
sort of a combination. It's not a classical labyrinth. It has a center, where the classical labyrinth, you know, doesn't have much of a center. And I wanted a labyrinth that had a center point because I think that's an important part of labyrinths, to be able to walk to the center and stay in the center and engage in meditation or ritual or prayer in the center. So it was important to me to have a labyrinth that had a pretty defined center. The center of the Chart labyrinth is that beautiful rose. You know, it's a lovely center. But you have to have a labyrinth that size.
Yeah. So it's seven circuits, and each circuit is designated to related to a planet. So
right,
when
well, that's
you walk.
How I do it. Yes, that's the way that I work with it at times. So then when you're walking one of the circuits, your focus is on, say, the moon and the intuitive part of yourself and your inspiration and your emotional life. And then another circuit, the sun, you know, your sense of power and enlightenment and illumination and consciousness. And then another circuit, you know, you put your focus on Mercury, which is your intellect and sense of communication. Each of the planets is a different archetype of the self. And the more attention you put on unveiling that archetype and understanding that part of yourself, the more you know about who you are. So, yeah, so the Labyrinth is just one way that you can put that attention in direction.
And is there a relationship between, for instance, when you walk in on yours, I don't know what path number or circuit that is when the first turn, but in the chart or in my petite chart, I think it's the fifth circuit that you are actually on when you go in the first turn. Sometimes it's the third circuit. Is there a relationship with your, hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I'm having problems here with my, site, but at least it's still connected. Is there a relationship between how you walk the labyrinth and the planets also, or do you just concentrate on each circuit being a different archetype?
Right. The thing that I love about the labyrinth so much is that it's like a ritual template. You can create any ritual out of the labyrinth. And so the best way to do it is to mark each of those turns with some sort of a symbol or something that will alert people to, okay, now I'm changing my focus to this, and now I'm changing my focus to that. Toby, who's a wonderful person that's been part of the Labyrinth Society, has a beautiful prairie labyrinth in Kansas that she has connected to each of the chakras. And that's pretty common, is to make a connection to the chakras with the labyrinth. And she has these lovely totems that she's made at each turn. So as soon as you turn into that, you know that, okay, now I'm focusing on the second chakra. Now I'm focusing on the third chakra. Because it's best, you know, with the labyrinth that you're not too intellectually engaged. I think that's part of what works with labyrinths, is that you move more into your intuition. And so it's best to have some sort of an image or a picture or a symbol that lets a person know what they're supposed to be focusing on at each turn. So you can change that around.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can make whatever decisions that you want to, just by having something on the path that alerts somebody, even a little message or a quote or anything. I love symbols. They're very important to me. And so I have a lot of different symbols of the planet. When I was in India, I got these beautiful sculptures of the planets, which I have images, and we'll set those out to let you know, like, which planet it's time to focus on. But it can be done in any fashion. So, for example, if you just wanted to focus on the moon, the whole thing could be on the moon. And then different qualities.
Yeah.
Mother, you know, the next path, nurturing, the next path, intuition. So the labyrinth is such a fantastic, like I said, ritual space. It's so movable. It's so changeable. And you can pretty much whatever you want to with it, which is what I do. You know, whatever the inspiration is.
So in your biography on your website, you talk about, speaking of archetypes and symbols, about Joseph Campbell, the author and mythologist. He was a huge influence in your life. Can you share some highlights of your years studying with him?
Yes, I used to live in New York City, and this is the time when in the early 80s, and this is when Joseph Campbell taught out at Sarah Lawrence College, which is outside of New York. And this must have been the period he was going through his own gathering of information, and he would have these weekend workshops in New York, or not workshops, weekend teachings, where he would show beautiful images and go through his mythological ideas and concepts. And he was so important to me, not only because of what he had to say, but I really understood the importance of the image. So, for example, if he was talking about goddesses, let's just say, there would be a picture of a goddess that I would be, like, staring at with my, you know, right brain, my intuition, my soul. And at the same time, he would be talking about the goddess or the history of the goddess, which my intellect and my left brain and my logical mind was picking up. And it became really clear to me that I was learning from on both of those pathways at the same time by using both the language and the symbol. And so I always teach that way. I always, he's influenced me to that extent that I always use images and symbols when I teach, because I think that not everybody picks up the information intellectually. Some people pick it up just with the image, and that you can really gain knowledge through your soul that your intellect doesn't know anything about. And so I usually teach to both the right brain and the left brain at the same time, and that really came out of studying and going to Joseph Campbell's program in New York City.
Was that difficult? I know for some people who are so left brain, you know, it's very difficult for them. Or so right brain, actually. Very difficult for them to not be logical, to not think of, especially with Labyrinth, to not think of, be so very goal-oriented. And I remember as a facilitator, very in the early days, I was trained and got my certified in 98, and I did go to Sharp many times. But that there were people who just found it very difficult to let go of that logical side. And I was wondering, was there a learning curve for you in terms of being able to process the information that he was giving you, so that the both sides of your brain were working consecutively or coordinatedly, or was this just an easy thing for you to do?
Well, I think for me it was pretty easy because I have a lot of planets in Pisces, so I tend to be pretty intuitive. But I also have a very quick mind, and I'm incredibly curious, which is why, you know, I went as far as I did at the university and got a PhD and like to teach. So I'm pretty balanced, I have to say, with my logic and my intuition, which is one of the things I love about Labyrinth and I love about astrology, is because there's a place for both. But I do agree with you completely that for many people it tends to be off balance, and people tend to be more intellectually stimulated. And I actually think it's one of the biggest challenges at this time in our life, especially with as much as we're stimulated with cell phones and computers and texting and media and television, and that our intellect is so stimulated that it's kind of like taking all the energy, you know, and our intuition and our connection with the soul and our connection with the spiritual world and the natural world is atrophying. You know, it's becoming smaller. So I absolutely agree that that's a problem, and I think it's one of the most important things that we can do right now is to engage in processes that open us up intuitively and give us greater connection to our soul life. So I completely agree with you. And I do think that labyrinths have that ability. I think that part of the thing about the labyrinth and the walking and the turning and such is that it confuses the mind to such an extent that there's a part of the mind that just lets go, which is why you can get those insights in the labyrinth. Because the mind can't figure out, well, am I in the second circuit or the first circuit? And how many more turns do I have? You know, at some point your intellect just has to give up. So I completely agree with you on that.
And as far as archetypes, do you see the labyrinth as an archetypal form? I mean, with your clients, has this form come up for them in their dreams? Like, you know, like Jung and the mandalas. You know, the mandalic form was very archetypal with his clients, and that was some of his extensive writings were on that. And labyrinths are really mandalas. So is that something that you've experienced?
Well, I absolutely think that labyrinths are archetypal forms. I mean, I think they're a symbol of wholeness and completion. They are mandalas, and that they also represent the journey. You know, you start at the circumference, you start at the outside, and then through this circuitous journey, you know, you end up at the center. And I do dream analysis with clients and guided imagery and different types of processes like that. And I don't know if people have mentioned labyrinths per se, but lots of dreams involve journeying, you know, or going from place to place, or being in a vehicle that's taking you from point A to point B, or being in a house, you know, where you're going from room to room or searching for something. And all of those things are labyrinth-like. And I do think a person could follow through with dreams like that by going to a labyrinth and engaging in their intuition and sort of acting out the dream through the labyrinth. But I don't think I've had anybody report a dream that specifically, you know, reported a labyrinth.
And but you're trained in past life therapy. Have you personally experienced a past life or lives where labyrinths or a labyrinthine kind of thing has shown up?
Well, in the sense that in past life therapy, you're connecting to your psyche, your soul, going into the shadow, into the collective unconscious, as Jung would say, and that's a big place. And so the best way to work with moving into your psyche like that is to ask for specific information. So I've never had anybody specifically say, I want to go where there's labyrinths or I want to be in a labyrinth. But I've had people be in temples or, you know, sacred sites or, you know, castle kinds of things, but not specifically a labyrinth. But that's because somebody hasn't asked for that. You know, if somebody said, I would like to see if I've had a past life that involved any kind of labyrinth experience, you know, you could ask for that. And the psyche will present that if it's there. So just because I haven't experienced it doesn't mean that it's not possible, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So let's get to what you're doing here for the TLS gathering. You're speaking about the Utopian Community of New Harmony and the labyrinths built by them. Were you familiar with New Harmony and its labyrinths prior to the invitation to be a keynote speaker there?
Oh, yes, very much so. And actually, it's why I'm so happy to be able to be a keynote speaker. And they've just done a phenomenal job and with this conference, this gathering. It's going to be amazing. And New Harmony is a completely magical town. It's like a labyrinth in itself. I mean, you know, you can just walk all over the town and there's benches to sit and places to meditate, and it's just a fantastic place. So I love New Harmony, and I'm just thrilled to be going, and I think it's going to be a wonderful gathering. In 1998, I started doing, as part of my labyrinth research, I discovered that this utopian community had built labyrinths, and this is almost 200 years ago. And actually, New Harmony is the name of the town currently, but New Harmony was built by an organization, a community called the Harmony Society. And they built three towns in the frontier. They built one in Pennsylvania called Harmony, Pennsylvania, where they lived for 10 years. Then they moved to Indiana and they built Harmony, Indiana, where they lived for 10 years. And then they sold that town where the gathering is, Harmony, Indiana, to Robert Owen, who was a Scottish utopianist. You know, he wanted to create his own utopian community. Everybody was wanting to make and build these utopian communities back then. And so he changed the name of the town from Harmony, Indiana, to New Harmony. And then the Harmonists moved. So New Harmony is the current name of the town, but it was actually built by the Harmony Society, and it's the Harmony Society that built the labyrinth in each of their three towns. So,
and didn't they move back to Pennsylvania and build another labyrinth back there?
Correct. They moved back to Pennsylvania, where they lived in a town. They called it Economy, Pennsylvania. And both Harmony, Pennsylvania, and Economy, Pennsylvania, are outside of Pittsburgh, just to give you a, you know, a general sense where in Pennsylvania we're talking about. And they built a labyrinth in each of their three towns, a big hedge labyrinth. And what New Harmony has done, with showing great wisdom, I think, is that as part of their historical commitment and appreciation of the town, they reconstructed one of the Harmony Society hedge labyrinths. And that's one of the labyrinths there. And it was originally reconstructed around, I think, 1939. And then just recently, Robert Ferrer, one of the great labyrinth makers, consulted with them and changed it somewhat to turn it back into its original design. So I'm really looking forward to walking the labyrinth as it was originally designed. And it's a beautiful, you know, it's a great hedge maze, about 160 feet. Well, it's not a maze, it's a labyrinth, but it's built like a hedge. You know, it's tall. And in the center is what the Harmony Society called the temple. There's a little 10-foot grotto or temple in the center of their labyrinth. And then Harmony Society, New Harmony also has a gorgeous rose quartz chart labyrinth. And it's, you know, then of course they're going to put a bunch of temporary labyrinths up. But I just became fascinated with the Harmony Society and why they would build these labyrinths. And they didn't just build one. You know, they built one in every town they were in. And through the diaries of people who visited the Harmonists, it's very clear that those labyrinths had a lot of significance to them. So that's what I'm going to be talking about in the keynote, is just to give people who love labyrinths some sense of why this group built these labyrinths. You know, what was the meaning? And why? How did they use them? So I'm really looking forward.
This harkens back to what you said right at the beginning of our talk, was that it was a religious belief system that they brought with them from the Germany, was it?
Yes.
Or that area. And it was out of their religious belief system that that's where the connection is, no?
Correct, and that's why I became interested, because my area is religious studies, particularly symbol and ritual. And so that's how I am studying the Harmonists. People who are interested in economics would be interested in a completely different facet of their life and their communal living, but I went after the religion, and they were real mystics and alchemists and fascinating people, just fascinating. Probably one of the most interesting groups that I can even begin to imagine. So, you know, they had a museum, they had a phenomenal library, they had a bigger library than the state of Indiana on things like mythology and, you know, alchemy. Homeopathy, and really great group, very fascinating group.
Well, I'm so excited and it just can't wait to hear your keynote speaker. And for everybody out there, make sure you get a ticket and sign up and register and come to this, because I think it will be just a fascinating couple of days, and I'm so looking forward to seeing this labyrinth and visiting both of them, and as well as all the temporary ones people will have out there for the public to walk.
Right.
So it should be a wonderful.
Yeah, and I think you're going to interview Ben Nicholson, who's been one of the creators of this gathering, and he's just done a fantastic job. So
yeah,
it's going to be great.
We're going. Yeah, and so I just have one question now. Back to now, the Harmonists did that, and they moved back to Pennsylvania. But this Owens, but did he incorporate the labyrinth in his views of his utopian society?
No, he didn't. And his society was more secular. It wasn't a religious society. And it was more of a social change that wasn't based on religion. And as we all know, it's one thing to build a labyrinth. It's another thing to maintain and upkeep a labyrinth, and especially a labyrinth made out of bushes and hedges and such like that. If that labyrinth wasn't maintained, it would be destroyed. And so the labyrinth did disintegrate. But fortunately, the Harmony Society, I've been into their archives, and I've discovered the three different diagrams and architectural drawings for each of their three labyrinths, and they're just gorgeous. And so they did leave behind the designs. So we do know what they look like, and they even say what kind of plants they used in them. But no, they didn't last very long after the new Harmony group came in. And actually, that Utopian group didn't last very long at all either. In some ways, it was, I don't want to say it failed, but it wasn't very successful. And
once the Owens Utopian, the socialist, I guess he was a founder, one of the founders of socialism or aspect of it, when that failed, who bought the town? How did the town survive? Or how did it, now it's a part of the university or Indiana, University of Southern Indiana? Or?
Yeah, well, the Harmonists were really productive. And they built, you know, a wonderful town. I mean, when 70% of the people in the surrounding area were living in one-room log cabins, they were building, you know, multiple-story brick homes. And, you know, so when you build things out of brick, they tend to last. And I think people just continued to live there. And I don't exactly know when the New Harmony Historical Association started, you know, really bringing the town into its current state. I know that Economy, Pennsylvania, which is now Ambridge, Pennsylvania, has, you know, you can take tours of the old town and such like that. So I don't want to say it's like Williamsburg, but, you know, people will dress up in period times and you can see how they did their weaving and how they did their gardens and such like that.
Let's look into the future a little bit, since I have this wonderful astrologer here on my show today. So how do you see the use of labyrinths evolving in this? We're in the age of Aquarius now, and, you know, it's going to be a bumpy, what they say, and I know this from my astrological studies, it's always a little bumpy, the 75 years prior and the 75 years into, but how do you see labyrinth use evolving in this age of Aquarius? In regards to the Aquarian, the aspects of the Aquarian age and what it means to be in the Aquarian age.
Right. It's an exciting time to be living in the age of Aquarius. And I think that the labyrinth is a unifying symbol. I guess that's the simplest way for me to say it. I think the labyrinth really, because of its mandala shape, because of its sense of wholeness, that it's a unifying symbol for this time, and it really shows how to move from the outside to the inside, how to become whole. And I love this sense of connection and wholeness, which is one reason I do a moon letter every month that I send out at the full moon, which talks about how to bring the sun and the moon together into wholeness and what are the two different energies and how they can be balanced. And I think that the labyrinth really shows that. I also think that the labyrinth is a bridge between religions and different worldviews and cosmologies. I mean, we're at a place where there's a lot of conflict about, you know, globalization and religious diversity and different types of religious groups and social groups living near each other and those sorts of conflicts that go on, and we really need to become unified. We really need to find a place to join together and find a place of peace. And I think that the labyrinth, as that symbol that crosses through all these different religions, can be very central there. So, and interestingly enough, astrology does the same thing. In India, the Buddhists, the Muslims, the Hindus, and the Christians all use astrology. It mm-hmm. crosses the gaps. It crosses the divides in the same way that
Labyrinth does.
Yeah. And, you know, I would love to just give my website, if I could, if anybody wanted to sign up, get my moon letter. And it's www.lashley.com, which is my last name, which is LASHLEY.com. And you can sign up for the moon letter there. And I put it out every month at the full moon to give you a sense of how to blend two different parts of yourself and bring those two parts into wholeness. So I think the labyrinth, very important symbol.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I'm agreeing that the labyrinth really is a not only is it a symbol of wholeness, but it's a symbol where you can engage and be embodied and connect. And I love to walk in community on the labyrinth, you know. The first 2 years I was with labyrinth, I always walked alone. There was nobody else there. And when I started walking in community, you know, with 20 or 25 people on the labyrinth together and hearing the shuffling of people's feet and negotiating the turns and moving through, there was just something so beautiful about it as a container of community. So I think that's another reason that labyrinths are important to this age of Aquarius.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I can't wait to meet you, Lillian. We're out of time now, but thank you so much for joining me today, and I so look forward to meeting you and hearing your keynote speech next week and joining you and everyone in community in New Harmony, Indiana.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for doing this.
It's my intention to enlighten labyrinth neophytes and support labyrinth veterans with guests like Lillian, who provide a depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. You've been listening to Labyrinth in the News in the live category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Join me on Monday, November 8th at 1:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, when my guest will be Ben Nicholson, the other keynote speaker at the TLS conference and gathering. Join us as we discuss his keynote topic, his many labyrinth designs, and his interest in sacred geometry. Have a blessed week in Lakesh.